The following presentation was recorded at a Faith Builders colloquy. More information on Faith Builders events at fbep.org.
Now I'll proceed with the stories that I want to tell you that come from my own experience and perhaps will set the stage for our discussion. First one is about a young man. I'll give you their first names. Some of them are fictitious. This is Barry. When I first met Barry, his father was in the Huntington State Prison for a number of years. I'm not quite sure how long he was going to be there. His mother, an alcoholic, and she was shacked up with some abusive man who created trouble for everybody in the family. Barry was beaten regularly, knocked around, kicked out of the house. All kinds of things happening to him, but being a fairly intelligent boy, he soon developed a survival kit. He learned how to survive inside of this system. And he brought those techniques along with him to Anchor Christian School when he came there. In about fifth grade, as a foster child of a family there living in our community. So, we started in on this situation. It's a real case. He lied. He sowed discord among the faculty. He set his foster mom against the school administration, and he was very, very well skilled at it. He knew exactly how to do it. But these were only manifestations of this survival instinct that he had. That's all it really was. And I could tell you a lot of stories about Barry. I spent a lot of time sitting down after school and having him sit there and talk to me and tell me stories of various kinds, some of them true, some of them not true, and you were supposed to make the discernment about them, and all of that. Now, I'm not going to tell you all of that interim information. This year, we saw this embittered, embattled, and embarrassed young man graduate from Anchor Christian School. A fairly fine young man. This happened at Anchor Christian School. I want to tell you a second story. This one is about John. John's parents met as patients in an insane asylum and got married. You probably could know something about this story from there on without me even telling you. He was abused. Really had no home. In fact, his sister, whom we've gotten to know fairly well, tells the story of how for a period of time in their life, they lived in a station wagon, or tried to live in a station wagon, on the beaches up around New York City there somewhere. And he spent a good many nights on the ironing board on top of the car, and his sister somewhere up there too, I forget how that was, and his parents in the car. And John is schizophrenic today. He had all kinds of difficulties and problems. I met him in prison. And he came to our place and lived there for 5 months, and I could write easily a book on the experience of those 5 months with John. I remember especially one time that I should tell you about just to give you a little bit of an idea of what kind of person he was. He came home from work because we had a rule there that if you fellows lived at our place from the prison or something like that, when I left the house, they needed to leave too. So when I went to school, they had jobs and they went to their jobs. And so I got home and came in, sat down at the supper table, and John came in and sat down. And being of a fairly religious nature, he started in on some subject, and I sat there and listened, and he went on and on and on about this. And after a while, he got in on the idea of prophecy, and he told me that there just aren't many of us left. And as he got into this more deeply, and if you knew some of his prophesyings, it would be even a bigger chuckle probably. However, I wasn't laughing. I was listening to what he had to say. So he talked, and as he talked, tears began to stream down his face. This boy had long hair. And eventually his face kind of falls forward onto his plate. And I can just still see all of this hair just down across this plate. And he's just weeping into the plate. And for about 5 minutes, he's like this, and I'm sitting there at the table. And my family is gathered around and thinking, how do we respond to this? And what do we do? He's no longer with us. He lives up in Harrisburg. I would just need to confess to you very quickly this morning that I had to admit I could not help him. I did not have the skill. I did not have the spiritual depth. I did not have what it took to help him. I cannot give you an ending to that story like we gave to Barry. A third one. Started a different point on this young man. I'll call him Bill. Bill attended Anchor Christian School. He was a liar. He cheats on tests. He's disobedient to his parents. He's cold and distant and has pretty much built a shell around himself and pretty difficult just to sit down and get right next to Bill's heart. To make a long story short, through a series of events, I ended up paddling him. And I didn't really feel all that good about it, but that's what happened. And not long after the paddling, a trash can in the school mysteriously caught on fire. And unfortunately, this young man was implicated in this situation. He never did admit to it, but very deeply involved in this thing. During the investigation of this, is the point that I want to get to, as I talked to him about the details of this involvement, questioned him about various things, about my involvement with him and so on, he made this comment. He said, you're just like my father. And I said, well, okay. In what way am I like your father? Well, he said, you just beat me around like my father does. And I had this sinking feeling in my stomach that I'd made a mistake. And he went on to say how he said, Dad hits us with hammers. And Dad hits us with two-by-fours. And Dad hits Mom sometimes. This is not a foster home. This happens to be a plain home. What would you do? One more story from my home community. I didn't finish that story for a reason. Oh, I should say this yet. When this young man told me this, I knew I was immediately being confronted with a very difficult situation in school. So I did eventually talk to this father about this. This is a difficult time. And when I asked him a little bit about it, he just looked at me and didn't say a word for about 2 minutes. So we just kind of eyeballed each other. Eye contact to eye contact. That's not an easy situation at all. He never did respond. Just finally got up and left. What would you do? I did not feel like we have been successful in that case. This young man is still in very difficult shape, a difficult situation. Another young man in our community, I grew up with him. He's also schizophrenic today. I saw him downtown the other day, smoking a cigar in shorts, and just had to shake my head and say to myself, well, again, what? We don't know how to do anything about this. Somewhere we're not getting it done. And I could tell you more stories. Well, the reason I have used these as an introduction to what I would like to say today is we have in focus this idea of teacher training and missions. And if you notice the order of the stories, we have in our minds that the mission is somewhere in the middle of Erie or in the middle of Philadelphia or in the middle of Pittsburgh or some distant place where people are down and out and they're really terrible people and all of this kind of thing, and fail perhaps to see a very, very important point, and that is that in our own circles there are great needs. Okay, great big crying needs. Okay? And so when we talk about teacher training and we talk about how this relates to missions, I would like to in some way try to chart a course this morning that says something about what Faith Builders would like to do about mission in the larger or smaller sense, whichever way you want to view it. I would like for us to think about what we can practically do. And I'm going to use the overhead projector here a little bit just to kind of diagram some of the things that I'm thinking about and some of the issues that we're facing here at Faith Builders when we think about trying to meet the needs of the kind of people I just described to you. Those were not stories I pulled out of my hat. They're real true stories that happened to me. And folks around me, and our school was involved with, and my family was involved with. Okay? So, I'll put the diagram here if I can, and then I'll talk about it here just a little bit. So, give me a minute here to get all of this stuff stuck together. Thing probably should be backed up a little bit, but perhaps this will work. I'll try to speak loudly enough that you can hear me. If you cannot, you just say so. I'm going to draw two circles on here, the one representing... Now, where am I at? Okay, the one representing the Christian community. And we'll draw another circle and call this the world community or the world culture or something outside of the Christian community. And I think it should be obvious to us that Faith Builders is a function of the Christian community. Notice I'm not going to put it outside of it, but put it inside it here and actually put teacher training program right in there like that. What I'm trying to do here, what I hope to do, is show to you the difficulty that we're facing here when we talk about mission. The teacher training program obviously is drawing from, the input is coming from the Christian community around us, and specifically the conservative Mennonite Christian community. This is where we're trying to draw resources from. This is where we're trying to draw personnel from. All of that, that's the input. And what I just got done saying to you, the stories that I was telling you, demonstrate that some of our mission, some of the work that needs to be done is here in our own Christian community. Okay? It's right beside us. Right on our threshold, right on our doorstep. That's where it's at. And I just want to verify here right to begin with that Faith Builders, while we're talking about some inner city mission, this cannot be neglected. This must be a primary focus. I think most of our communities are still interested in what we can do to begin to meet the needs right in our own communities. And I'm trying to point out to you, I think there are more there than what you think there are. Those of you who have been teachers know this, because you bump right against the edge of where those problems are on a daily basis. And I suppose that as the Christian school movement has matured, that has become even more obvious as time has gone along. This is a pretty big task. I just bring into focus the boy I called Bill again. What would you do? This is your home. Now, this wasn't our home church, but my home community, a plain family, a boy accusing his parents of being abusive. He's one of my students. There is a situation that has developed that has brought all of this into focus and puts me right on the front line with it. Now what should we do? Tim and I were just talking the other day about what we would do in an inner city. So here comes a child who's abused and bruised and broken up and all of that. Then what? Are you going to report to parents? Are you not going to report them? You're going to go talk to them? What are you going to do? And I was careful to demonstrate that that's happening here as well as here. Okay? So we have to be thinking about that. Teacher training program is going to go out into the Christian community. Now, above and beyond that, I'll just be real honest with you. Not only is there a problem with these extreme cases of abuse, but I don't need to tell you that our Christian communities are generally in disarray. And a great deal of discussion about a whole pile of subjects, not quite being sure what kind of course to chart and all of that. Faith Builders has no intention, we don't think that we can fix all those problems, we know that. But we surely hope that this teacher training program in some small way begins to address some of those very, very, very difficult things. For example, we are taught to love each other. And I guess in the last year or 2 years, this has just really, really gripped me. I don't know if we know how. The more talk about it, the less of it I see, in many cases. Or you can hardly get through a Bible conference without some discussion about unity in the brotherhood. But I'm not sure if we know how to do it. I'm a little uncertain that we have an idea of how to go about this. The teacher training program certainly would not address that kind of an issue directly, at least not on a daily basis. But when we talk about discipleship here, I think we're talking about, well, how do you love as Jesus Christ loved? How do you serve as He served? How do you teach as He taught? Just to say I'm a teacher, even to have somebody say, Melvin is a good teacher, does not mean that I am doing the thing that I'm talking about, okay? Where I'm actually feeling and loving and serving and honoring and ruling over, yes, as the book of Romans talks about, people under my charge, but doing it in this godly context. That's what teacher training is about. And that's the reason we don't make any apology for saying there's a great deal of weight on discipleship in this program. Because that discipleship program is designed to teach us how you love and what you really do when you walk out this door, when you're walking down the hall and somebody has not done their cleaning job right, or somebody did not cook the food the way you thought it should be cooked, or all of the other host of difficulties that may arise here, which you're aware of, some of you at least. Teacher training program expects to be involved in the discipleship program that these people who are walking out into the Christian community have learned some lessons about these things that I've just raised. Loving and serving and honoring and blessing their communities. Okay? I guess I kind of view it this way. As I look, well, I'll refer to Elijah. The Old Testament survey students will recognize this little event. You remember Elijah marched up Mount Carmel and took along with him a lot of Baal worshipers and a whole community of people for a contest. And he wins. And he's quite certain right then and there that in fact there's a great revival on the way and things are going to change and this nation is going to become godly. The victory is won. And you know the story of what happened. He goes down, Jezebel threatens him, he runs off. Now, it has always been significant to me when he gets down to Mount Sinai finally, God says to him, ask him repeatedly, at least three times, I think maybe four times, Elijah, what are you doing here? Now, I'll bring that up for one reason. Remember what he told him in the end? Elijah, there are 7,000 people in Israel who have not bowed their knee to Baal. What are you doing here? If I were to fault Elijah on any one point, here's where it would be. He was a great man of prayer. Can't fault him there. He was courageous. Can't fault him there. But he failed to mobilize and bring together the 7,000 people in Israel and, should I say, put them into a fighting force to actually change the situation there. He could not on his own. This teacher training program hopes to contribute to that notion. I have long ago given up the idea, not long ago, but a few years ago, given up the idea that we would have some great evangelist come into our congregation or into our conference, and he would stand up and he would preach and teach, and there'd be great weeping and great crying and great changing of hearts, and it would all change overnight. I've seen that happen, except for 2 weeks later, no difference. And so I began to think, well, what's wrong with this? I mean, if you were there 2 weeks ago on Sunday night or Saturday night and watched these young people all go to the front of the church, and by the way, don't misunderstand me, if you need to do some repenting and do it publicly, we'll do it. But all these people go up in recommitments and so forth and so on, and 2 weeks later, I don't see any significant change in the community among the young people or the old people at all. Why not? Well, I have become convinced that unless there is a strong grassroots movement that comes from fathers and from teachers and from people who will put a great deal of energy and time into building up that congregation or that group of people, the revival will never happen. I point to one other example for biblically. Samuel did build schools for prophets. I don't know if he built them physically, but he had schools for prophets. And if you trace the period after the Judges, there you see a national revival that took place, or a national shift at least, that took place over those 20 years in which Samuel was sturdily preparing other prophets who had learned under him to go out and to teach in the countryside throughout Israel and raise the moral consciousness of the people, which he did. You can't help but see that when you get to the time when they ask for a king. And it's, I think, also one of the reasons why Samuel said, what? You want a king? Why can't you see? We've gone from here to here, and the king is not the answer. The answer to this is to start way down at the bottom where these little youngsters are growing up, and have moms and dads teach them, and have good teachers throughout the land who are teaching folks how people ought to live and what godliness is. Because you remember at the end of the book of Judges, remember Micah? And how he thought he was being godly, because, oh, here came a Levite priest by, and he said to himself, well, I might as well sanctify this whole idolatrous system, because it's, if I remember right, when I was in catechism, or our dad said one time that Levites are really the ones who are supposed to be the priest. So he grabs that Levite, says, I'll make him priest. See, he thought he was being godly. I really believe he did. But he didn't understand godliness at all. And so when I say that we need people who will teach us what godliness is, it's one thing to say this is godly or that is godly. It's another thing to really hit the nail on the head. That is godliness. And raise the consciousness of people, the moral consciousness, the people around us to that level. That has to happen here. If faith builders cannot contribute to that, then you understand now that I'm not in any way claiming that we are going to do all of this. We can't. We know that. But we want to contribute to that process. Why are we training teachers? We expect them to go home to their communities knowing how to love, knowing how to serve, knowing how to build up their home communities. Well, then, what about this over here? Well, we have there are two possibilities. We can think in terms of preparing people sufficiently that what will happen is the Christian community and the various congregations, as godliness builds, they will develop their own programs and they'll go ahead and do this. Or we can think in terms of doing this directly. And at this particular point, I do at least want to talk about a practical area in which some of you at least have heard that Faith Builders has been somewhat involved. Take the Philadelphia 6th Street Mission. You probably saw a little bit about that in our literature. I want to be real fair and upfront with you. We have not been able to raise funds to send personnel there and be just directly involved. However, the involvement has been something like this. I personally left Chambersburg and went and sat down with the steering committee and worked. They asked me to go along to Philadelphia and decide if this was even going to be sensible to try. So we did, looked at the facility, looked at the situation, helped them to plan for curriculum, for scheduling, and some of that type of thing. But I told them, we don't have personnel to send to you. Neither do we have money to call this FBEP's mission. This is your mission. And we really prefer it that way, actually, at this point at least. And so they pretty much have I wrote up some guidelines, gave it to them, and they took that and have pretty much gone ahead and they're ready to roll this year. They have Brent Stolzfus with them. He's going to be teaching, and a couple of other administrative changes to make it handier to have school there. Our intention, from our perspective, is to go down there not to check on them, but to go down there occasionally to see how this is working. Learn. Find out what works and what doesn't work. And perhaps the time will come when we'll see something happening here direct from the teacher training program here at Faith Builders. But at this particular point, no. I'll also mention to you that, well, I'll just put these on here so that you get them. 6th Street, then Guatemala. The director of Mennonite Air Missions is a good friend of mine, grew up in our community, Dwayne Eby. Some of you probably know him. He's at our place and sat down and talked to him a bit, and he said he has a vision for starting schools throughout Guatemala. Wide open door there, but you have to have some training. They have a certain amount of regulation if you just go out into a village and start a school. Okay? And he asked, would Faith Builders be at all interested in kind of a joint venture? And I said, perhaps by and by, I'm not sure. But yes, I think we would. There's a possibility. I think you all know that with the fall of the Iron Curtain, it's possibility unlimited there. If one did the hard work of articulating a program and got over there and got with it. It's just kind of a crying shame that this community right here, this includes all of us, I'm not excluding any soul that is sitting here this morning, this community right here has not had enough vision and enough drive and enough energy to walk through the door when it's open. It seems to me as though while the door is open, we stand, nice open door, why don't you go? Why don't you do it? Why don't you do it? Yeah, we should do it. Well, then let's do it. I don't know how quickly that can be done, but I surely would be interested as time goes along. Remember, though, the key is right here. If we can't do it here, I don't see any point in talking about it anywhere else. And furthermore, I guess it's sort of the same way, just at a general spiritual level. If you can't do it in your home church, if you can't do it in your home community, if you can't do it, what's the point? I mean, why transport all that over there somewhere? Okay? That's why I'm saying there has to be some concentration here. And we'd like to contribute to that. For example, I'll just give you one attitude that has got to change. That attitude, missions or even schools, good schools are a drain on our system.
Did you ever think about that? Now and then, people say in our community, $100,000 we put into education every year. And in some of your communities, I'm sure that it's more than that. And they say, oh my. And I think that they're thinking, if I had my share back, I could have done this, and I could have done that, and I could have done the other thing. I don't want to be accusing somebody that if that's not true, but I get the feeling that that's kind of the case. Missions likewise. It's a drain. I want to say something to you. It's not only not a drain, it is our lifeline. Okay? Get that down and think about it. It not only is not a drain, it is our lifeline. That's true of our schools, and that's true of the concept of mission. Well, it's written right into the genetic code. If you don't have a new influx of genetic information in any given group, that genetic pool will tend to deteriorate. It'll tend to go backwards and begin to produce aberrations and so on. But if you have a steady influx of new genetic information, you tend to dissipate that problem. Okay, so it's written right in there. You can go to history, you can find this. If you think about the ancient Roman Empire, when it began to split up into the East and the West, any observer at that time would have said that the Eastern Empire, where Constantinople was the center of things, was the empire of the future. It was the one that indeed would dominate history for a long time to come. And it did. I'll have to admit it did there for quite some time. But while that was happening, over in the Western Empire, what was going on? Well, you had Norsemen pouring down in there, and you had Vikings pouring down in there, and you had, well, you even had the Huns knocking at the door for a while, and all kinds of, I mean, just total chaos. But what emerged out of that? There emerged out of that what we call Western culture today, which has its faults, no doubt, but it has become the dominant culture rather than the subordinate culture. And I suggest to you that one of the reasons that happened was because of this sturdy influx of new ideas and new nations, and new people. It tore all of Europe up for a while, but when it settled down and the dust settled, there emerged some pretty hardy people out of that situation. I suggest maybe something similar here. So this notion has got to be destroyed. Okay? Especially in terms of our schools. I honestly don't understand why a person would think that investment in the training and teaching of the rising generation is a drain or a mistake. Why, even the secular people know better than that. Now, they have failed on a couple of issues. Their idea was if you can just pour enough money in a system, it'll be okay. Well, they're realizing that that doesn't work. And I'm not saying that either. But certainly, we had better not draw back from the position and say, well, close down our schools, fold up, fold our hands, shut our eyes, put our heads down in the sand, and live happily forever after. That is not going to happen. It might happen if we're not careful. Let's not ever get that notion. I doubt I have to convince most anybody who's sitting here of that point this morning. But I'm telling you, if you go to the rank and file member of many of our congregations, you'd have a little problem convincing them that I'm really right. that we need investment in this, and we need to put a lot of time and energy into it and find our best teachers that we can in our communities and train them and get them to do the job and help them to do it. It would take some convincing at some places to get that done. I mean, a lot of places. Okay? So that's why I'm saying that. Yes, Faith Builders is interested in this over here, and yes, we're going to pursue it. Because just as Tim said, if you go over here into this world, you're going to bump up against problems that you never did before. But I'm telling you, we're going to come out of it with some bumps and bruises and scratches and black eyes and bloody noses And maybe, I mean, I don't know, some people may die in this kind of situation. You know, inner city is a tough place. Might happen. But I'm telling you, in the long run, it'll be good. It will do something that it'll bring us face to face with issues that we need to face. Now, on a very practical level, though, it raises a problem here for us. And that is, if in fact most of the people who come here for teacher training want to go back into their in their own home community, then the model of school here at Faith Builders, what we're actually trying to produce at Faith Builders Christian School, which Tim is in charge of, takes on a particular flavor. However, if in fact we're trying to approximate a school that you might find over here, then it takes on another flavor. And so as Tim and I were talking about this, yeah, I mean, the problem began to crystallize quickly. So if you go down here and you invite everybody from the community in here and say, what we're going to do is we're going to train teachers for this, then the average person sitting here who is coming to try to learn how to teach, especially in their home communities, will find themselves at somewhat of a disadvantage because that model will be a little different and call for a different approach. By the same token, if we build a model here, approximated here, which is the track that we're headed on, then it becomes a little difficult to recreate the kind of situations that you're going to find over here. Okay? Because, well, that's just the nature of things. That's just the way it is. So maybe somebody here will have an ingenious idea of how you get by this particular problem. We can think of a two-school situation where we have Tim and I discussed a little bit, something like, well, there's Jay Fox in Reading with a school that is already much more inner city than what we are. And perhaps think about people who are specifically interested in this type of thing, having them train here some, but more specifically under folks who are already doing this inner city, okay, getting a good feel for it. Anyway, I'm just pointing out to you some of the practical things that we have to think about here when we're trying to develop a teacher training program. Okay? I hope you can appreciate that dilemma. And I hope that you can be a little bit, patient with us as we work through and think through how all of that has to emerge to really serve the people that we're trying to serve. Okay? That's what's going on here at this particular point. Okay, I still have that kind of at the wrong place, I guess. Well, I'll just let that on for a minute. So if I can just kind of reiterate a bit, we view the Christian community as a great pool of potential. I do not think, I am not ready to point fingers at the young people and say, well, they're just so terrible that there's nothing to be done. In fact, I think that's a very ridiculous statement to make. Rather, I'm seeing things at 39 years of age the way God apparently wanted Elijah to see them. And that is, there are 7,000 or better good people, not only young people, older people, middle-aged people. There are a lot of good people in our communities. All they need is some kind of something to rally around, somebody to mobilize the force, as it were. And I think this needs to happen on the local level. I want to be clear on that. I don't think it's a question of somebody going out here and saying, we're going to call out all of these 7,000 from the various Christian communities and we're going to pack them together at one place and then we'll get something done. So much as saying what we want to do, what we'd like to do, is be able to, on a longer-term basis, address these problems in our communities and watch our communities change. Okay? So, the bottom line on this is, I hope you have learned this by now, the bottom line is, if you expect faith builders to do what you think should be done in the next year, you'll be disappointed, probably. I'm under no illusions. We are looking at a job of hunkering down, digging in, setting up camp, and working hard for years if this kind of thing is to happen. Just like Samuel did over a period of years before, in fact, the moral fiber of that nation began to rise. See, I don't think most of us have calculated the cost of doing what we would like to see done in our communities. It's a higher cost than what we think. Well, I, for one, am ready to roll up my sleeves and put on my boots or whatever has to be done and dig in and do it. That's what we want to do. A question was raised in respect to some of this yesterday. Well, what kind of teacher trainee should we actually be turning out? Now, I like to do, in order to get these jobs done, I like to do this little thought experiment now and then. Okay, so if you had the opportunity to make or to develop this teacher training person, this teacher trainee, you've got magical power. What you can do is you can just give him whatever he wants, whatever he needs. So now I just want you to imagine. Here he is. You see him? And I want you to tell me how tall he should be. I want you to tell me how you're going to cut his hair. I want you to tell me what kind of shoes you're going to put on his feet. I want you to tell me what you're going to put in his back pocket. And by that I mean what kind of economical power are you going to give him. I want you to tell me what his portfolio is going to look like. And by that I mean, what credentials does he have? Are you going to give him a four-year college? Now be honest here. Don't just say to me what I think it should be. So should we give him a PhD, a master's degree, a BS degree, or what should we do? You give it to him in your mind. What kind of wife will you give him? Assuming this is a gentleman. How big do you think his family ought to be? You just designed this person. Well, you get them all designed, and you thought through all the issues that you can possibly think through. Well, I wouldn't mind having that list. Just exactly what it is that you would like to see in a teacher trainee. For my part, it seems to me that we need to think about people who can sit down with the Bills and the Barrys and the Johns and have effective, active communication. I'd like for you to turn to a passage which I think is a key to this whole idea. Matthew chapter 17. And I don't mean to suddenly jump outside of practicality. I think this is very practical. Chapter 17, verse 4. Well, just let me tell you the story. I see the time's running out here. You remember there was a Jesus. Let's see, where was he at? I forget where he was at. But anyway, he came on a scene where the disciples were attempting to deal with a person who was apparently had some kind of demon possession. And I don't know what they were doing. I don't know if they were praying over him. I don't know if they were anointing him. It doesn't say, but they were trying, and they couldn't get anywhere. So they asked Jesus, why could not we cast him out? Verse 19. Jesus, of course, came in and just kind of away he went. And then Jesus' answer, which you know very, very well, but I just want to read it to you. Jesus said unto them, because of your unbelief, for verily I say unto you, if ye have faith as a grain of mustard seed, ye shall say unto this mountain, remove hence to yonder place, and it shall remove, and nothing shall be impossible unto you. And then this great statement, howbeit, this kind goeth not out but by prayer and fasting. I will still insist to you that the person who is best qualified to work with the Barrys and the Johns and people of this nature are going to be people who know something about the spiritual disciplines that are outlined in Scripture. If they don't know how to pray, and it's one thing to pray, and it's another thing to know how to pray. if they just don't pray. Now, I'd have to admit, fasting, I haven't fasted for a length of time for, I don't know, maybe 5 years or something like that. Every time I read this, this just strikes me again. Why do we hunt for answers all over the creation when in fact we have some very pointed statements from Christ Himself? If we can send out of this teacher training program, Tim, people who pray, people who know how to serve, people who know how to love, people who fast when they need to, they're sensitive enough to know that that's what's to be done. My suspicion is if we teach them plenty of content and the other things we've heard about, they will be great teachers and they will contribute to your communities, and that's our intention. We want that to happen in our communities. The transition here to my conclusion is just a little bit difficult because of a few things. I'd like to read in conclusion a poem that I came across sometime. It's nobody takes credit for it. And it says something about my feeling from gut level about what it's going to take to do this job, the kind of people it will take, the amount of energy it will take, and all of that. Here it is. He has no enemies, you say. My friend, your boast is poor. He who hath mingled in the fray of duty, that the brave endure, much have made foes, if he has none. Small is the work that he has done. The point that I'm making here, and I want to emphasize this is a pretty big task. We know there'll be enemies. We know all of that. But we want to know something about duty. He who hath mingled in the fray of duty, that the brave endure, much hath made foes, and much progress is made. If I must die young, let me die in the line of duty and not at the hands of my friends. What I mean by that is I wonder sometimes about the inter-tribal shootings and killing of each other that gets done, and the enemy is never really engaged. By God's grace, let's engage the enemy. Shall we pray? Father, we thank you for the opportunity and the open door that lies before us today. Forgive us for our lethargy. Forgive us for shutting our eyes and closing our ears and relaxing and enjoying life without thinking about these very, very difficult situations and without being willing to put ourselves into the fray of duty. Thank you for the many fine people who are represented here and the 7,000 in Israel who have not bowed their knee to Baal, but stand ready to engage the enemy if only somebody somewhere will lead them. I pray that faith builders in our Christian communities may raise up many Samuels, many shepherds, many pastors, many fathers, many mothers who will be able to do the work that we were thinking about this morning. I pray that you would bless us with this blessing. In Jesus' name, amen.
For the most current Faith Builders recordings, visit ChristianLearning.org. And for more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit the DocForLearning.org.